Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
They know they're relying on each other's second-place vote to win. The only way either of them wins is by the other's second-place vote.
How gubernatorial candidates Les Guerra and Bill Walker are setting themselves apart. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, September 7th. Good evening, I'm Wesley Early. Also tonight, a Fairbanks man accused of murder fled to Canada before his arrest.
He ditched the car and tried to walk across the United States border.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Everyone knows eating fruits and veggies promotes a long and healthy life. It's important to make every bite count. Alaskans are lucky to have greens and berries from the land, as well as fresh, frozen, and canned. When it comes to living a long and healthy life, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by USDA SNAP Ed.
One of the closest outcomes in last month's primary election was between Democratic former state legislator Les Guerra and independent former Governor Bill Walker. They placed second and third behind incumbent Mike Dunleavy, with just 550 votes separating them. Alaska Public Media's Kavitha George reports on how Walker and Guerra are trying to set themselves apart and how the new ranked choice voting system changes the race.
Democrat Les Guerra and independent Bill Walker are running against each other in this race, but they have one big thing in common. They're trying to unseat incumbent Republican Governor Mike Dunleavy.
We're the only ticket that could beat Mike Dunleavy.
Governor Dunleavy, I think, has torn the state apart in a way that's not acceptable, I think, to a majority of Alaskans.
Conservative candidates pulled in more than half of the primary vote, compared to Walker and Guerra's shared 44%. Analysts like Burke Croft with Ship Creek Group say historically more progressive voters show up for general elections, meaning Walker and Guerra both have tough but realistic paths to victory in November. But he says in a ranked choice voting system, it requires them to differentiate themselves as candidates without alienating each other's base.
Guerra and Walker are kind of in a prisoner's dilemma right now. They know they're relying on each other's second-place votes to win. The only way either of them wins is by the other's second-place votes.
At the same time, they're both vying for a second-place finish in order to make it to a final runoff against Dunleavy.
Both campaigns also know that if they have less first-choice votes than the other, they're going to be eliminated in the second round.
Neither candidate has engaged in negative campaigning so far, and they don't appear likely to start. In fact, Walker and Guerra have a lot in common. Both are known for working across the aisle. They both want to reform the state retirement system and increase funding for schools. Neither one supports a constitutional convention. But for now, hoping to lock in those first place votes, Guerra and Walker are focused on traveling across Alaska, giving their best pitch to voters. Guerra, who's running with his Democratic Lieutenant Governor pick, Jessica Cook, has positioned himself as the only pro-choice candidate in the race.
I will ask judges if they support our current court precedent on the right to choose, because that's how we're going to lose the right to choose in the state, is by appointing judges just like at the federal level who are willing to take it away. And that is not something I'm interested in.
Walker, who is pro-life, says he would defend Alaskans' constitutional right to access abortions. Guerra says he expects a larger swath of progressive, pro-choice voters to turn out in November and carry him over the finish line. Meanwhile, Walker is positioning his bid, along with his lieutenant governor pick Heidi Dreiges, as the strongest unity ticket on the ballot.
You know, I come from the right to the middle, and Heidi comes from the left to the middle, and we are, that's why we have the kind of support we have, the broad base of support, because And we are moderate, and I think that the vast number of Alaskans are also moderate.
Still, the special election for U.S. House last month showed that political leanings don't necessarily correlate with how Alaskans vote. The ranked choice field is hard to predict, says analyst Burke Croft.
We would expect a lot of Guerra and Walker voters to rank each other, but I think it's very possible that some people might vote differently. Like, you can imagine a Gara Dunleavy voter who really cares about the PFD, or you can imagine a Walker Dunleavy voter that's a little bit a center-right voter.
Both Walker and Gara say they plan to rank each other second on their ballots. The candidates still have 2 months to make their cases to voters. Election Day is November 8th. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Kavitha George.
Former Republican legislator Vic Coring died in a vehicle crash on the Glen Highway north of Palmer Tuesday evening. Alaska State Troopers say the 64-year-old Wasilla resident was driving a van that collided head-on with a semi-truck after crossing the center line. Coring served time in prison on a federal corruption case that roiled the Alaska legislature. In 2006, Coring was caught on surveillance video in a Juneau hotel suite, accepting cash and agreeing to push a tax proposal favored by oilfield services company Vico. On the tapes, Coring can be heard asking Vico founder Bill Allen for help with a $17,000 credit card bill. The videos show Allen handing him cash for, among other things, his daughter's Girl Scout uniform.
Let me help you on that on our little uniform.
On the uniform. The 50 I sent was a little short, so thank you. Since you need about 100.
I appreciate that, though. Thank you so much. You're good.
Coring served in the State House from 1995 until he resigned in 2007. He was chair of a special oil and gas committee. He favored small government, opposed taxes, and slept in his Juneau office to save money. An appeals court later vacated his conviction and ordered a new trial, citing material withheld by the prosecution. Coring pleaded guilty as part of a 2011 plea agreement to one charge of conspiracy to commit bribery. He was sentenced to time previously served. Coring claimed he was the, quote, target of unscrupulous prosecutors. Troopers say an autopsy is expected and the driver of the truck was not injured. Meanwhile, Anchorage police have arrested a 37-year-old man who they say was firing a gun yesterday at cars driving along the Glen Highway in Northeast Anchorage. At least one person was injured. Franklin Diaz Jr. faces numerous charges, including attempted murder of a police officer, assault, reckless endangerment, and weapons misconduct. Police say 911 calls started coming in about the highway shooting shortly before 6:30 p.m. yesterday. Callers reported that a person was walking along the bike trail near the Glen and Boniface Parkway overpass and shooting into traffic. Police later identified that person as Diaz. A court document detailing the charges against Diaz says the bullets hit the passenger of one car driving along the highway. That person was taken to a hospital with injuries that were not life-threatening, according to police. A responding police vehicle was also hit. The officer was not injured. More police responded and reported seeing Diaz and a woman running on the bike trail. Police say the two eventually stopped when they saw how many officers had arrived on scene. Both were arrested. Police say just before Diaz was taken into custody, officers saw him throw a handgun, which was later recovered. Police also found a large knife in the area. The motive for the shooting is still under investigation. Diaz is in custody at the Anchorage Correctional Complex. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a push for more accessible transportation options in Anchorage.
You can't fix what you don't know is broken. And if people don't understand, then they're not going to want to make the change.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Invasive plants and animals threaten Alaska's environment and economy and can spread to new locations by hitching a ride. Anyone can help prevent the spread of invasive species by remembering to play clean go, removing all plants, animals, and mud from boots, gear, and vehicles before entering and leaving recreational areas will help stop invasive species in their tracks. Learn more at playcleango.org. This message sponsored by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
A 21-year-old Fairbanks man was arraigned Tuesday on a charge of first-degree murder in the death of an elderly woman last weekend at her apartment on the city's south side. Judson Sherrell also was charged with stealing the victim's car and fleeing into Canada before being arrested while trying to cross back into Alaska. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Fairbanks Police spokesperson Teal Soden says officers found 75-year-old Carol Jo Romberg's body in her apartment on 28th Avenue just past midnight Saturday morning after responding to a report of a vehicle crashing into a garage door in the area and then driving away.
It appeared to responding officers that she had been stabbed.
Later Saturday, investigators identified Sherelle as the suspect and launched a statewide manhunt. They say Sherelle stole Romberg's car and headed south to the Canadian border, where he slipped past an Alcan Beaver Creek border crossing checkpoint in the Yukon Territory.
He essentially was able to just drive through, getting on the side of the road and drive through the Canadian Border Patrol checkpoint.
Investigators believe Sherelle turned off the Alaska Highway at Haines Junction in the Yukon and headed south on the Haines Highway. Soden says he got to within 4 miles of the Alaska-Yukon border crossing at Haines before the car broke down.
He ditched the car and tried to walk across the United States border, where he was apprehended by U.S. Border Patrol.
She says Customs and Border Protection officers handed Sherelle over to Haines police, who held him until Fairbanks police arrived and arrested him and took him to the Lemon Creek Correctional Center in Juneau. That's where he appeared telephonically for Tuesday's arraignment before Fairbanks Superior Court Judge Paul Lyle on charges of first-degree murder and vehicle theft.
FPD would like to thank the U.S. Border Patrol and the Haines Police Department for detaining him until FPD detectives could make it down there.
Soden says Lyle granted a request by the Fairbanks District Attorney's Office to set bail at $5.1 million because they considered Sherelle to be a flight risk. His next court appearance is scheduled for Tuesday, when he may enter a plea on the charges. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
Anchorage Mayor Dave Bronson's plan to house people who are homeless this winter now includes using two recreational centers as emergency shelters. Members of Bronson's administration presented the mayor's sheltering plan to an Assembly Housing and Homelessness Committee meeting this afternoon. The city estimates that roughly 350 people will need shelter this winter. The city plans to house them, including using portable buildings, providing microgrants to local nonprofits, and continuing sheltering efforts at a downtown hotel. Also, the administration is planning to build a new shelter and navigation center in East Anchorage. Bronson's administration first outlined the plan last week, but what was different today is that using the recreational centers in the Spinard and Fairview neighborhoods as shelters is no longer a last resort. Downtown Assemblymember Chris Constant took issue with that.
This is the element that both shocks and moves me towards trying to find another path, and that's because it was listed as a final alternative if all other elements didn't work, and now it's listed as the first element.
Bronson officials said they anticipate the rec center shelters starting up by September 29th and could shelter up to 150 people each. Alexis Johnson, Bronson's chief of staff, said the city is looking at finding alternative facilities for children who typically use the rec centers once they're repurposed.
Possibly work with the surrounding schools to take the programming that's available at the rec centers and possibly implement them in an Anchorage School District facility with the staff that would be used by Parks and Rec Department.
As for the other parts of the sheltering plan, the timelines are less concrete. Deputy Chief of Staff Bryce Wilbank says the city is still finalizing their work with an unnamed community partner to get the portable buildings as a donation.
So with that, we're anticipating to have about 20 portable structures set up at one location is our aim right now.
The city has not said where the buildings will go. Wilbank says the administration plans to start using the portable buildings in the fall. As for the new shelter, Bronson officials estimate it could begin housing people at a reduced capacity starting in late November before construction wraps early next year. Anchorage residents who have disabilities often have a hard time accessing public spaces and just moving around the city. One woman, the reigning Miss Wheelchair Alaska USA, is advocating for the Muni to better serve people with disabilities, especially when it comes to transportation issues. Alaska Public Media's Laura Fillion has the story.
On a trip to Fred Meyer in June, Christy Lent and her husband were looking for accessible parking. She says a municipal car was taking up one spot.
And, you know, my husband questioned him before I had a chance to and asked him if he had a disability, you know, placard or permit. And he said no. And what's it to you?
Lent, who uses a wheelchair, was born with spina bifida, a disease that affected how her spine developed. And she's used to advocating for herself. As a child, she testified before Congress to help pass the Americans with Disabilities Act. These days, Lent works as a photographer. In her free time, she enjoys watching pageants. And now, she has her own title, Ms. Wheelchair Alaska USA. Lent says she wants to use her platform as a way to continue advocating for others with disabilities. Lent spoke to the Anchorage Assembly in June, just before her encounter with the Muni employee.
I have chosen as my platform Travel Without Barriers to highlight issues that affect those with disabilities and so that they can travel safely, not just around the country, but also around the community in which they live.
She says it's not a problem of not having regulations. It's that no one is enforcing the ones that already exist.
When a business has handicapped parking, for example, which is a federal law, but then you have police from the municipality coming and saying, well, we can't do anything because this is a private parking lot, then there becomes this he said, she said type mentality.
It's not only Lent contending with travel around the city. Rose Johnson, a 23-year-old, moved to Anchorage earlier this year. She says that while she uses Anchor Rides, the accessible bus system in Anchorage, the wait time is unreasonable. Johnson has cerebral palsy, a developmental disability that also affects her movement. She uses a wheelchair full-time and still loves to travel with her mom, Janet.
It's such a huge factor in quality of life to be able to actually physically get out into the community. But we like to go every place.
Yeah.
And we have gone. Like, we found Elvis's house, right?
Oh,
yep.
Yeah.
Janet Johnson says even before her daughter moved to Anchorage, they traveled here from Cordova to attend medical appointments. But once in Anchorage, getting around was next to impossible without Janet's wheelchair-accessible van.
There's nothing around town that you can just snap your fingers. Well, I mean, they have the taxis, but that can be... How long have you and Sam waited? Sometimes you walked instead of getting a taxi.
In addition to trouble getting to places, wheelchair users often have accessibility issues once they arrive. Lent went to vote on August 16th at her new polling place, a church in South Anchorage. She says it didn't have an accessible exit, and she had to wait in a long line to use the only wheelchair-friendly voting booth. As she was leaving, the poll workers put down a rickety ramp for her to use. While churches are exempt under the Americans with Disabilities Act, polling places, she says, are required to be accessible to everyone.
It's not until we start breaking down that kind of mindset that we can start fixing the architectural barriers, because you can't fix what you don't know is broken. And if people don't understand, then they're not going to want to make the change.
Lent wasn't able to compete in the national competition for Miss Wheelchair USA because she got COVID-19. But she hopes to continue her work advocating for people with disabilities in Alaska. She has been appointed to the Anchorage Assembly's new Equity Advisory Committee and plans to compete again in Ms. Wheelchair USA next summer. In Anchorage, I'm Laura Fillion.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
First National Bank Alaska, celebrating 100 years of helping Alaskans shape a brighter tomorrow. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Everyone knows eating fruits and veggies promotes a long and healthy life. It's important to make every bite count. Alaskans are lucky to have greens and berries from the land, as well as fresh, frozen, and canned. When it comes to living a long and healthy life, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by USDA SNAP Ed.
The state's largest school district faces a budget deficit of at least $68 million next year as federal pandemic funding runs out. The Anchorage School District expects to receive millions of dollars in one-time funding from the state this year, including $16 million in operational funds. District administrators have proposed saving that money to prevent an even larger deficit for the next fiscal year. District CFO Jim Anderson spoke to the school board at a work session on Tuesday.
If we were to have spent all of the one-time funding from the state, our deficit would be around $100 million. If we preserved the $16 million and met or exceeded our fiscal year 23 projected enrollment, our starting point was about $68 million deficit.
The school board is set to vote on that at its next October 4th meeting. Over the next few months, district administrators will discuss how to offset the deficit. At Tuesday's meeting, they discussed closing schools and cutting sports or language immersion programs. Anderson says the district plans to send out several surveys to gather community input.
How would the families, the students, the staff, the community prioritize what is most important for them to retain and what is least important, so we can get an idea of which general direction the community's leaning.
The first survey will go out on Friday. Others will follow throughout the next 2 months. The district also plans to host community town hall meetings starting in October. Meanwhile, a coalition of Alaska organizations and agencies won $49 million to grow the state's mariculture industry over the next 5 years, the White House announced Friday. Mariculture is the farming and enhancement of seaweed and shellfish, and it's picking up steam in Alaska. While the industry is still somewhat in its infancy, proponents say the state, with its thousands of miles of coastline, has the potential to become a leader in the industry. The U.S. Department of Commerce believes in that vision, too. The Alaska Mariculture Cluster was one of 21 recipients of the Build Back Better Regional Challenge grant funded through the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021. The cluster will have 5 years to spend that money. Robert Venables is executive director of Southeast Conference, the organization taking the lead on the project. He says after months of planning, it's time to get to work.
We won't have much time to bask in the glory of the moment, but we got a lot of work ahead of us, so we're excited.
As it stands today, most mariculture in Alaska is concentrated in Southeast Alaska, Kodiak, and Prince William Sound. Tim Dillon with the Kenai Peninsula Economic Development District said the mariculture cluster has been gathering information from Alaskans in the business to decide where the money is needed most. The cluster identified 8 different projects, including a revolving loan fund funded at more than $9 million, and a plan to build up mariculture equipment and technology funded at nearly $16 million. Dillon says he's excited about the money appropriated for workforce development.
One of the things that we've heard is the graying of the fleet from our commercial fishermen. Well, this is an opportunity that maybe we can get some newer folks, some younger folks, or some people that are dabbling in, okay, how do I, if commercial fishing continues with some of the hardships that they've had, is this a way to offset some of that and keep some of those folks involved?
Members of the Alaska Mariculture Cluster will be meeting in Ketchikan next week to talk about next steps. Volunteers on the Kenai Peninsula are taking stock of the area's streams in an effort to protect the salmon and other fish that might live there. KDLL's Sabine Pooks tagged along on a stream mapping trip last month and has this story.
Four-wheelers and hikers might just breeze past this tributary of the Moose River, a short and wet hike just a few miles from the highway in Sterling.
Yeah, so this spot, like, I mean, if you were just walking past here on a hunting trip or something, right? I mean, you probably wouldn't even notice that there was a stream. But
Ben Meyer is an environmental scientist for the Kenai Watershed Forum. He and 2 volunteers are bushwhacking through the marsh to verify Meyer's suspicion that there are salmon feeding and growing in the waters here,
where there's not quite as much, you know, sport fishing action, but from the salmon's perspective, this is just as interesting of a place.
Well, the next coho I catch down in Centennial Park, I'm definitely going to have an appreciation that it could have came from all the way up here.
Chip Tamani is a first-time volunteer with the project, a partnership between the Kenai Watershed Forum and the local branch of Trout Unlimited to add more streams into the state's anadromous waters catalog. Anadromous fish, like salmon, are born in freshwater and migrate to the ocean to spawn. The state of Alaska keeps a list of streams and lakes that have been verified to have anadromous fish, which affords them certain protections under the law. Any proposed development that might affect an anadromous body of water first needs a special fish habitat permit. Regulators work with permit holders to make sure they mitigate any impacts on fish populations there. The Watershed Forum and Trout Unlimited are working with local and national grants to collect data and add more streams into that catalog. This summer, they've gone out to several spots on the Central Peninsula to check for the presence of anadromous fish. That's what brings the group to the Moose River Marsh. Meyer says if they spot just a few anadromous fish and can confirm they're living there, they can nominate the stream for a spot in the catalog. He says it's a little bit like prospecting.
But in general, the minimum threshold for most sites around here is if you find two juvenile coho or kings or some kind of anadromous species, two observations of two fish.
Meyer's already looked at this spot on the map and can tell there are likely fish here. Juvenile fish seek out streams like this one because they're cooler than the main stem river and sheltered from predators. Meyer and the volunteers set several traps in the shallow water to see what they can find.
So maybe if the two of you guys are setting out traps, you're welcome to help.
Trout Unlimited has been mapping streams all over Alaska for years. Mark Hieronymus works with Trout Unlimited out of Juneau. He says the survey project was born out of a recognition that guides and anglers in southeast Alaska had a lot of local knowledge about where anadromous fish were, even if those areas weren't yet in the catalog.
The true real world on the ground assemblage was vastly different, and that some of these species were apparently, because of their lack of inclusion in the catalog, their habitat was relatively unprotected.
He says turning that local knowledge into usable scientific data is a way to get more comprehensive information for the conservation of those species.
A lot of these places that we're going, this is baseline data. This has not been picked up before. And so that is additive to the general body of scientific knowledge concerning fish and their distributions in Alaska, which is hugely important.
Dave Acheson with the local branch of Trout Unlimited says teams on the Central Peninsula checked out seven streams this summer and worked with a dozen volunteers. Volunteers don't always find fish, but Meyer says they've been getting better at reading maps and predicting where fish could be. And sure enough.
Yep. So he was probably born just this spring. He's not very big.
Like prospectors, our group spots a glint of something shiny in the trap, a young coho. There are several in the traps after a half hour, each about the size of a finger.
So here's our field identification of coastal juvenile salmonids.
Tamani, the first-time volunteer, looks at the salmon through a plastic container. He thinks it's remarkable that there are salmon in this marshy of a spot.
Yeah, you can already see that little bit of black in their tail that you totally see when they're adults swimming in the river. They have that distinct line.
They got the spots, yeah.
Further upstream, they find even more, plus a handful of rainbow trout and Dolly Varden. That means Meyer can nominate this 0.7-mile stretch of stream, everything from this point down to the mainstem Moose River. If regulators greenlight the nomination, the area will be added to the catalog and protected. After snapping photos and taking field notes, the group releases the fish back into the stream. In a year or two, they'll head back to the ocean, miles and miles away from this place they're briefly calling home. In Soldotna, I'm Sabine Pooks.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Kavitha George, Liz Ruskin, Laura Fillion, and Chris Clint in Anchorage, Tim Ellis in Fairbanks, and Sabine Pooks in Soldotna. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby, Katie Anastas is our producer, and I'm Wesley Early. Good night.
Are you ready to start accelerating your child's future through education? The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program is expanding its reach with new opportunities in Juneau and Southeast Alaska. With ANSEP's Acceleration Academy, high school students can earn college credit, save thousands of dollars in college costs, and experience fun, hands-on learning. ANSEP, it's a better way to learn. Learn more and enroll at ansep.net/acceleration. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.